You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the wild and woolly world of unbridled commerce, you'll often encounter disgusting life forms that can only be described as sleaze. For example, take the roving band of companies that profit by essentially bilking vulnerable military veterans of their pensions. These financial corporations appeal to vets who face some personal crisis and need quick cash. No problemo, say the financial agents. Just sign over your military pension payments to us for a while and we'll advance you some cash. Only later do these desperate veterans realize that they've been robbed. To get, say, $20,000, they give up $60,000 or more in monthly pension payments, amounting to as high as 75% interest. These schemes are illegal, for the law says that future military pensions cannot be signed away by a retiree. Incredibly, though, the Pentagon sides not with our soldiers, but with the profiteering companies that prey on them, even handling the paperwork to divert the retirees' pay to the corporation. Pentagon officials twist the language of the law, declaring that these are not assignments of retiree pay, which would be illegal, but merely the, quote, collateral for loans taken by retirees. The companies twist the language further, denying that these are even loans. Rather, they say that these deals are straightforward commercial transactions. We are just purchasing a stream of payments, one lawyer said coldly. Even colder, whenever veterans balk at paying the usurious ripoff, company lawyers sue them, usually in courts far away from where the vets live. Financially strapped retirees cannot afford to challenge these companies, so they are losing the cases by default and often having to file for personal bankruptcy. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's bankrupt here is a system that's robbing veterans. Where's Bush? Where's Rumsfeld? Where's Congress? To help battle this outrage, call the National Consumer Law Center, 202-452-6252.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from Oregon to West Virginia. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Also streams on Live 365 and Cable Radio Network. And you'll find us as well in archives at thewhiterosesociety.org, or whiterosesociety.org, and on tomhartman.com, where you can also drop into our chat room, already full of some of the finest minds in the entire Internet. It's Friday, as always on Friday. The first hour of our program is our Brunch with Bernie segment. In 1991, Congressman Bernie Sanders became the first independent member of Congress elected in over 40 years. He's since been reelected seven times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. His email address, or I'm sorry, his website, which also contains his email address, if you want to get in touch with him or see what he's up to, bernie.house.gov, bernie.house.gov. And Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Oh, it's always great to have you here on Fridays, Bernie. By the way, for our listeners, if you want to call in, our number is 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, in the news today, this was a local news out of town of Covington, Kentucky. A Vietnam vet who froze to death beneath a railroad bridge was buried yesterday in Covington. He died in single-digit cold. I'm reading from the news report. A few blocks from a shelter where he had previously stayed, and a few days before he was to move into an apartment that had been arranged for him. The 57-year-old guy, apparently wounded by the Vietnam War and in ways beyond just the normal physical. We're seeing these horrible, horrible woundings of not only our soldiers, but the and of course the combatants on the other side in Iraq, but the civilians of Iraq as well. I didn't hear any mention of that yesterday in Bush's speech, and I didn't hear any mention of folks like this guy, Joe Young, that is the poor and the homeless in America, in President Bush's speech yesterday. Did you?
I suspect very strongly, Tom, that all those rich folks who paid thousands of dollars to go to the various inaugural balls really did not have homeless veterans on their mind. But you raise an issue which is an absolute scandal and an outrage, and something that my office is going to be working very hard on when Congress reconvenes, and that is the way we treat our veterans. I get sick and tired of hearing this president tell us how much he loves the troops, and yet last year he threw 160,000 veterans off of VA health care. Hardly got much press, but that is what he did. People who had an income over $25,000 a year were too quote-unquote rich to be eligible to continue their VA health care if they wanted to come into the system. And what I am worried about is that the new budget that he is bringing forth is going to be a disaster. And we have a sense of where he is coming from. Because listen to this. There was a Republican chairman of the Veterans Committee, a conservative Republican named Chris Smith of New Jersey. This guy is a conservative Republican. Mm-hmm. But apparently, because he was honest about his concerns for veterans and actually took his chairmanship seriously and wanted to help veterans, in an unprecedented manner, the Republican leadership got rid of this conservative Republican who was chairman of the Veterans Committee because he was too pro-veteran. And what that tells me is that there's going to be a horrendous budget coming down for veterans. And on top of all of that, as you've just indicated, we're looking at thousands and thousands of Americans who are over in Iraq, in Afghanistan, who have been horribly wounded, who are going to come back to a VA system, which today is in no way prepared to deal with them. Now, if that's the way you love the troops, well, maybe I don't know what love is.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. This administration consistently siding on the side of the very wealthy, the multinational corporations, those who would sell out America. I thought it was remarkable that in his inaugural address yesterday, every 30 seconds he used the word liberty or freedom throughout the entire thing. Keith Olbermann notes 27 freedoms, 15 liberties in the 2083 words. And yet I didn't hear human rights mentioned at all. And I thought that was an almost eerie juxtaposition. I mean, we are supporting, as a result of Bush's policies in the war on terror, we have gotten a whole lot closer to, very much gotten in bed with, some of the most repressive regimes on earth. I mean, Pakistan, we sent an Australian that we'd captured in Afghanistan to Egypt, where for 6 months he was tortured. We're exporting people. We're in the Bush family's in bed with the Saudi Arabian government. And he's talking about this stuff. I mean, what's going on here?
You don't have to go abroad. I think one of the concerns that many folks have, and it's another issue that my office will be working very hard on, and by the way, we'll be working with some conservatives on this, and we should not lump conservatives in America with the agenda of George Bush. A lot of conservatives, for a variety of reasons, are very upset with what Bush is doing, and one of those areas, Tom, is just what you're talking about, the condition of respect for our Constitution. You don't have to worry about Pakistan or Saudi Arabia, which are oppressive authoritarian regimes. Let's worry about what's going to happen in the United States of America with the USA Patriot Act, with day after day seeing attacks on Americans' basic rights. There was a piece on ABC last night, a pretty good piece, talking about what the new technology is about, so that the government will have information on virtually every American. And if people feel comfortable in trusting the U.S. government with information about every aspect of your life, so be it. I don't. So the issue of how we defend basic constitutional rights in America, how we get rid of the ugly sections of the Patriot Act and other types of legislation, is a major issue that Congress has got to address. And on that one, you're going to see some honest conservatives work with those of us who are progressive.
Yeah, well, that's great. It's absolutely remarkable to me. Here's George Bush talking about. Oh, hang on just a second. Got to plug a plug in here. There we go. This is George Bush talking yesterday. This was, I thought, one of the most startling things I heard him say, given that he has detained over 1,000 people and told them that they have no rights. And Condi Rice and all these folks. Just a very, very quick little piece here.
From the day of our founding, we have proclaimed that every man and woman on this earth has rights and dignity and matchless value.
Every person, except those that he deems as enemy combatants.
Well, it's more than that. What you're saying is true, but there is no question that these guys are not great respecters of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
And we have got to be vigilant. We've got to form coalitions. And in fact, we're doing that. Actually, next week, we're going to be meeting in Washington with a wide spectrum of people. Again, conservatives, progressives, who are saying, hey, we may disagree on a lot of issues, but we're pretty proud of the U.S. Constitution, one of the great documents ever written. And we're going to fight to preserve freedom of dissent and individual liberty right here in the United States, despite the empty rhetoric of this president.
God bless you. You've got a piece on Common Dreams today on the front page of commondreams.org, which is probably arguably one of the largest of the progressive websites. And I think it was originally published in These Times, Ground Control to Mr. Bush. And you start out with a quote from George W. Bush just a month ago. There's a trade deficit. That's easy to resolve. People can buy more United States products if they're worried about the trade deficit, says George W. Bush. Why don't we just all buy American, Bernie?
Well, the reason that I wrote that piece, Tom, and it's an issue, another issue. I mean, you actually were going over what my agenda is going to be in the next few months, is, to my mind, while we fight to defend individual freedom in America and respect our constitutional rights, what we also have to be mindful of, and I didn't hear the president say one word about this. You know, when you listen to a speech, it's important to hear what the guy says. It's important to hear what the guy doesn't say. I didn't hear too much reference to the shrinking of the middle class. Did you hear too much about that one, Tom?
I didn't hear one word about it.
Gee, what about the increase in poverty? 4 million more people poor under Bush. Hear much discussion on that?
You know, what's interesting, Bernie, is in 1936, in July of 1936, when Franklin Roosevelt accepted the second nomination of his party, he gave a speech in which he said, an old judge, a British judge, once said, necessitous men are not free men. In other words, he goes through this whole thing about, you know, the freedom from fear and want and how if people are in poverty, they cannot be free. And I heard Bush yesterday use the word freedom 27 times, and yet not once was it in the context of the real freedoms here in the United States that are economic.
And we have to talk about what freedom is. That fella, that veteran who died
under the bridge, yeah,
the cold.
Yeah.
This man, I mean, how are you free when you don't have the basic necessities of life? And the important point, and I think what this whole inaugural ball extravaganza is about, is that Bush is the president of the rich and the powerful. He is not the president of veterans who are sleeping out on the street. He is not the president of workers who are losing their jobs because his corporate friends are sending those jobs to China. And the point that I made in that article is you have a president who says, oh, gee, buy American. Well, it's getting harder and harder to buy Americans because the CEOs of major corporation after major corporation are shutting down plants in this country and moving as fast as they can to China, and they are shameless about it. They don't hide it anymore.
They're proud of it.
They used to hide it. Now they say it with pride. Head of General Electric, IBM, you may have seen that one of the concerns that the Midwest should worry about is if things go as I suspect they will, if we don't change it, the automobile industry in Detroit is going to be in China in not so many years. But that's true for almost every industry. Years ago, people said, well, don't worry about it. It's only blue-collar jobs. Blue-collar jobs. Now what we're looking at, and CEOs are very clear about this, China will be the information technology center of the world in 10, 15, 20 years. Projections out there from economists that the major economic power in the world will no longer be the United States. It will be China. Last week, you and I discussed a study which indicated that real wages for the American worker continue to decline. So what we're seeing is Bush's friends paying thousands of dollars a night for hotel rooms in Washington to celebrate his reelection, the middle class shrinking, poverty increasing, 45 million Americans without any health insurance. That's the reality of America today, and it is absolutely imperative that people who are concerned about these issues, concerned about constitutional rights, get involved in the political process, talk to their friends, and develop a strong grassroots network in this country, which will make sure that we do not have more presidents like George Bush.
Yeah. And the final piece of this, the Free Press, Sean Turner, wrote an article in which they quoted you as saying that George Bush's plan to privatize Social Security, turn it over to Wall Street, would be a disaster.
Well, it's more than a disaster. You know, Tom, I believe, you know, I don't believe anybody, not you, not I, have all the answers to all the issues. And it's important that we have a debate. We respect our conservative friends and so forth and so on. But what I dislike about Bush's, the role that Bush is now playing in terms of Social Security, and I wish I could use another word to describe it, but the fact is that he's lying. Social Security is not in crisis. Social Security is not going bankrupt. According to the Social Security trustees themselves, Social Security will be able to pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 37 years. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, Social Security will pay out every benefit owed to every American for the next 47 years. And then with some modest tweaking of the system, Social Security will be good for decades after that. Now, if George Bush came forward and said, look, I'm a right winger.
Bernie, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up on the other side of the break. We've got to take a break.
We could debate that.
We'll get to that. Okay. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Sanders The only independent member of the House of Representatives for many, many years. I think of him as America's independent congressman. Bernie, you were just wrapping up a good rant there just before we went to the break. Sorry we got caught by the commercial. Let me let you finish that, and then we'll go to the phone lines. Oop, got to push the right button.
If the president had come forward and say, look, I believe that the government should not be sponsoring Medicare or Medicaid or the Veterans Administration. I don't believe in government programs. I don't believe in guarantees to the American people. I think everything should be privatized, and I think we should privatize Social Security. I would respect that. We could have that debate. But what the president is doing is really outrageous, because he's trying to frighten the younger people of this country by saying Social Security is going bankrupt. It's not going to be there for you. And that happens to be a lie. Yeah, every major study done shows that Social Security is strong, will be there for, depending on the study you look at, 37 years, 47 years, with modest changes, it will be there for decades after that. So, Mr. President, stop lying about the condition of Social Security. Let's go from there.
That's strong language, Bernie. I know you folks in Congress are very, very careful about the language you use.
Well, here's why, Tom. I respect different points of view. Yeah. But how can somebody say that Social Security is in crisis when, depending on the study, it's there for the next 37 or 47 years?
Yeah. And
you could say you want to privatize Social Security. I would respect that point of view. We could debate that. But you cannot intimidate and frighten the young people of this country and say Social Security is going bankrupt. It is not going bankrupt. Simple as all that.
Yeah, and if you want a real crisis, talk to the relatives of Joe Young, who froze to death under a bridge.
Exactly. Yeah. Talk about health care. Talk about the environment. Talk about the high cost of drugs that people can't afford today. Those are crises. Talk about homelessness.
Yeah.
But Social Security? Not a crisis.
Not a crisis. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to speak with Congressman Sanders. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good day, gentlemen. Well, Bernie, I appreciated you telling us that incident about the conservative Republican who was dismissed because he was too pro-veteran. But I wanted to kind of tie that into the Secretary of State. Now, tell me if you agree with me on this. I believe the Secretary of State should be our diplomat in chief, represent the United States to the world, and of course, as opposed to the Department of Defense, be a department that tries to promote peace. Now, Colin Powell, even though I kind of lost faith in him a little bit over the weapons of mass destruction, I always felt that he would not necessarily do whatever Bush wanted him to do. He would tell the truth as he saw it, and thereby serve the American people. I just feel if Condoleezza Rice is confirmed, and I guess she will be, that she will just blindly do whatever Bush tells her to do, and I don't think that serves our country well.
Well, Rick, I think you make a very good point, and it's not just Condoleezza Rice. What Bush has done in this second term is bring to him people who are really going to echo what the Bush administration wants them to. In other words, and I agree with your assessment of Colin Powell. I was disappointed, very disappointed in him, but one had the feeling that he at least was willing to convey a different point of view within the confines of the Oval Office. Tell Bush give him a different perspective than the neocons who are running that administration. I have the fear, not only with Condoleezza Rice, but with other new appointees, that what you're going to have within the Oval Office is an echo chamber. People are going to be in absolute agreement. Bush will not hear different points of view. And I think that is very dangerous for our country.
Yeah, with Alberto Gonzalez now, the torture memos and all this is not the America that I remember growing up.
In other words, what a good president should do is hire the best people, obviously people who are basically sympathetic to his agenda, that's obvious. But at least you want to hear different points of view. You want debates within the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And I think that is not going to be happening. It'll be happening even less than was the case in the first term.
Well said. It's Brunch with Bernie on the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Just an old truth teller. I'm your candid friend.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program Brunch with Bernie segment. The first hour of every Friday. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. If you'd like to call in and speak with Congressman Sanders or Bernie, our number 1-866-889-8894. And Austin in Houston, Texas is on the line. Hey, Austin, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I do have a question for the congressman. With all of the problems of ethics associated with Tom DeLay, I was wondering if there is any strategy thus far put together to possibly get rid of him like was done with Newt Gingrich.
Well, I think the Democratic leadership is working on a strategy. As you know, one of the good pieces of news in recent weeks is that there was enough pressure put on the Republican caucus in the House so they couldn't go forward with their outrageous plan to allow DeLay to remain in power, even if he were indicted. So I think that some of the Republicans are feeling the heat, and understand that there has to be at least some kind of minimal standards for ethics. But I think you're going to see a lot of pressure in an effort to get rid of DeLay if he is indicted.
Thanks a lot, Austin. Appreciate the call.
I have another question.
Oh, go for it, sure.
I happen to live in Tom DeLay's district, so I see his antics being played out, especially in the last election, where some of his henchmen, I call them, went around and were removing signs of Morrison and
his opponent
Kerry from various locations, and then trying to intimidate various workers at different poll workers, et cetera, at different locations. And I wanted to let the public know that there have been numerous protests in his own district in order to get rid of him. Unfortunately, in Sugar Land, Texas, there's a high percentage of millionaires. He has a lot of very conservative voters. And the whole redistricting thing was to shore up his base, at the same time shifting Nick Lamson outside of the Congress, and he took over part of Lamson's district, but doing so, he diluted his base. The whole deal with the Texas legislature redistricting process, in my opinion, is 100% nothing more than obvious gerrymandering.
Yeah, and no, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the line of, I think, when one thinks about Tom DeLay, what one thinks about is a guy who is determined to win at all costs, even if it means breaking the rules. And what I will never forget is that last year, when that disastrous prescription drug Medicare bill was passed, it was passed after keeping the rolls open for 3 hours rather than 17 minutes in direct violation of all House rules. And they needed that time to twist arms, and they did it. So this is a guy who will break the rules to win, and I hope the people in his district fully understand that.
This is in violation not only of House rules, but over 200 years of House tradition. Now, just a very quick question here, Bernie, before we go back to the phone lines. I thought Denny Hastert was the Speaker of the House. Tom DeLay is the leader of the House. Who gets to decide which rules are enforced when?
The Speaker does. But the general feeling is that I wouldn't say that Hastert is a puppet of DeLay. I wouldn't say that. But that DeLay has a great deal of power within the Republican caucus and is a very strong voice in determining what happens. On the floor of the House, DeLay is, I think, the field general. And before the acting speaker, it's not usually the speaker who's up there at the chair, but the fellow who's up there gavels down a vote, he looks to DeLay, and DeLay will tell him when he could do that.
Yeah. So, and I misspoke. DeLay is not actually the leader of the House of Representatives. He's the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives.
Yes, right.
And as such, he holds that power.
He's the majority leader.
Yeah, okay. The majority leader. Let's go back to the phones here. Joy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Joy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Bernie, for all the work you're doing.
Thank you.
And Tom. I want to go back to Social Security. And I think what a lot of people don't understand is if Bush gets his way with it, the next year after it goes into effect, the Social Security system is going to start losing money, as opposed to the way it is right now, which is if you are driving a car and you're three quarters of a tank full, you don't throw the car away, you refill it.
That's right.
And so could you expand on why we'd be losing money immediately?
Yeah, and in fact, let me add to that, to what Joy asked Bernie. One of the folks in our chat room said, could Bernie please explain how Bush says he's going to reduce our deficit, yet he wants to borrow $2 trillion to give to Wall Street in the name of Social Security.
Okay, good questions.
Seems like it's all part of the same thing.
Well, thank you.
Let me take the second first, and then we'll go to Joy's.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bush can well reduce our deficit by cutting back on veterans' needs, cutting back and slashing Medicaid, cutting back on environmental protection, and cutting back on housing, of which he is proposing some disastrous cuts in HUD. So you can move forward to reduce government spending by cutting back on the programs that the middle class and working families and lower income people need. And that's the direction, obviously, that he will go. Joy's point is a very important point. Common sense suggests that if you divert substantial sums of money from the Social Security Trust Fund because if you're setting up these private accounts, what you're doing is diverting substantial sums of money from going into the Social Security Trust Fund. And the estimate is that over a period of years, there will be a gap of some $2 trillion. And the way you deal with that is either by A, reducing benefits, which is something that certainly will happen, slashing the benefits for retirees, and not only for retirees, but for people who are disabled, people who are on survivor's benefit, because there's less money coming in to the system than we had anticipating. And B, what you also do, and that was the other question raised, is you're going to have to borrow substantial sums of money, which means that the deficit national debt will go higher.
Well,
but that's what is in store for us if Bush gets his way in privatizing Social Security.
Couldn't this be fixed really, really easily if we just raise the limit on how long we continue to contribute to Social Security by taking off the cap on it?
That is certainly one very simple solution. Yes, it is, Joy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one that many of us are advocating. Right now, as many listeners know, Bill Gates contributes the same amount of money into the Social Security Trust Fund as the somebody who makes $90,000. If you remove that cap, substantial new money will come into the system, which will keep it going decades longer than the 47 years it is already scheduled to go. So, Joy, that is one of the sensible solutions.
Thank you very much, Joy, for that call. I do appreciate it. Charles in Albany, New York, is on the line. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Congressman and Tom. Hope you're both warm here in Albany. It's absolutely freezing.
Yeah, it is here in Vermont, too.
And another time I'll ask if you know of any old-fashioned ways to keep a oil pan warm so that the oil doesn't turn to solidified form. But this is a more pressing issue or question, actually. I earned a minor in political science, and one of the things that always fascinated me is when you have a fissure within a party. And I have read numerous articles about that there is this fission within the Republican Party because a lot of the House Republicans are not exactly, bowing down to the Bush administration and putting up a fight to them when it comes to certain issues. I think there's approximately 20 of them that are giving a hard time and not exactly going along with delays. I don't know else to call it, whipping. So I wanted to ask the congressman, do you know if this exists? And because of the fact that a lot of moderate or even some conservative Republicans said we cannot support the president because of this war, the way it's being done, do you think there's the potential that in some way, shape, or form, a sort of, I hate to use the word moderate, but some type of common agreement coalition be created between Democrats and these reasonable Republicans?
That is an excellent question. And that's an issue that some of us work on very, very, spend a lot of time working on. What we should understand, and I think sometimes the progressive-minded people don't understand it, is if you think that every quote-unquote conservative in America is lining up behind the Bush agenda, you're terribly wrong. And I think what progressives have got to do on issue after issue is reach out for common ground. And there's a lot of room for common ground. For example, I mentioned earlier the issue of civil liberties. If you think that an honest conservative who believes in limited government, that's their mantra. They don't want big government. They don't want big brother. Do you think that most honest conservatives want to see the federal government expand its capability to spy on the American people? They don't. Let's reach out to them. Many conservatives who are pro-military are outraged at how Bush is dealing with the veterans and the inadequate budget that he has provided for the VA. Let's reach out to conservatives on that issue. Many, many conservatives are disgusted with Bush's trade policy and the fact that his corporate CEOs are throwing American workers out on the street and moving to China and compromising not only our economy, but our national security. Vast majority of conservatives do not support Bush on those issues. If you think that everybody who considers themselves an evangelical Christian is happy with the fact that 45 million Americans have no health insurance or that poverty is increasing, most evangelicals are working class, lower income people. They need health care. They don't want to see their friends living in poverty. So you raise a very important question, and it's something that many of us work very hard on. Let's not label people. Let's not stigmatize people. Oh, he's a conservative. We can't work with him. Reach out and work with people where there is common ground. The essential fissure within the Republican Party, their split, is the party, of course, is run by big money and by corporate America, by the folks who pay thousands of dollars a night to attend the inaugural ball. Those are the people who are running the Republican Party. What they have managed to do is to trick a whole lot of working class and lower income people to support an agenda which is absolutely destructive of the middle class and working families of America. And our job is to reach out to honest conservatives, explain the issues, and create that kind of fissure in the Republican Party so that the vast majority of the people will be turning against Bush's agenda.
Bernie, at some point, if you get honest conservatives saying, yes, okay, we agree with you that we should not have homelessness in America, and that there is a social contract, and that we should have Social Security, and that even health care is a good thing, a universal health care, because it'll actually make it easier for entrepreneurs and small businesses, and the many things that you just listed, aren't they then really liberals?
Not necessarily.
They just think they're conservatives because they like NASCAR or something?
Well, that's a long discussion, Tom, as to what we mean by liberal.
Yeah.
I think in the modern sense of the word, they're probably not. For example, most conservatives do not believe that the government should play a stronger role in health care because they don't believe in a large government. I believe that we should have a national health care program. It's the right thing to do. It's the most cost-effective way. Conservatives don't. On the other hand, conservatives who believe in limited government, for the same reason they oppose a national health care program, do not believe that the FBI should be spying on you when you go to the library or getting into your house.
So then what you're saying is let's pick our battles rather than trying to fight an all-out war.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Many conservatives may not believe, maybe strongly opposed to gay marriage and so forth and so on. So I think respect people's different points of view. Hold on to what you believe, but reach out to people on issue after issue. Veterans issue, absolutely conservatives will support us. Trade issue, yes. Civil liberties, yes. Many will support us on the war in Iraq because they see that as an overextension of what the federal government is doing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I think you pick and choose the issues, and I think that's the way you form coalitions.
Yeah, and particularly for you as a member of Congress, I would imagine that works really well. For me as a talk show host, I'd rather beat up on them, but that's a whole other thing.
It's not a question of beating up on them. Beat up on the issues.
There you go. Okay. Trey, let's go to Trey in North Carolina, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Trey, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
I have a quick comment. He was hitting on a lot of points that I want to make. I think that Democrats make a mistake when they focus on Bush because, the interview with Justin Frank on the Majority Report, they were talking about, saying a lot of things that I normally say about how people kind of sense a certain fragility in Bush, and they feel sorry for him, and so they feel like they can trust him. They don't like to see people blame Bush for something. So I think Democrats should focus more on what Bush represents in terms of the conservative agenda, the neocons.
Yeah, pick on the issues instead of the person.
Yeah, and focus more on PNAC and how this affecting our foreign policy and all this stuff instead of just talking about what Bush did, because as soon as you say that, people don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And well, so, Trey, you make an excellent point. An excellent point. I think on a personal level, for example, in terms of the last campaign, I think if you looked at Kerry or Bush, while issue by issue, I think people agreed with Kerry more than Bush. Personally, people look at Bush. He's not terribly articulate, just kind of supposedly just a regular old guy. And they kind of like them and trust him. And I think Trey's point is exactly right. Don't beat up on the individual. Let's look at the issues.
But Bernie, excuse me.
Tax breaks to billionaires and cut back on veterans programs. You know what? 90% of the people in this country don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, but over 70% of Bush's campaign spending was beating up on Kerry. Every single speech, he would make sarcastic fun of Kerry. I mean, Bush beat up on Kerry relentlessly, and some people say that's why he got as many votes as he did.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So that's good politics, isn't it? I
mean, yeah, they know how to run campaigns, and one of the aspects of their campaigns is to savage their opponents.
Yeah, okay. Matt in Oklahoma, we've got about 30 seconds, Matt. If you make a quick question, and Bernie can pick up the answer on the other side of the break.
Okay, great. Bernie, My question is, a lot of us are a little bit frustrated that we don't see a more united front from Democrats and an independent like yourself against some of these nominations that we are vehemently opposed to, Ms. Gonzalez, or Mr. Gonzalez and Ms. Rice.
Right. Okay, so we'll hear Bernie's comment on that on the other side.
Matt,
thanks a lot for the call, and I appreciate the comment.
Cool.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes before the hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where smart people get their news.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Overfishing off the shores of West Africa leads to overhunting of wildlife on land. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People in West Africa have relied on fishing to put protein in their diets and money in their pocketbooks. But the fisheries off the African coast have been severely depleted. A recent report says the loss of fish at sea has serious consequences for wildlife on land. Justin Brashears is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish stocks off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. He says the fish have been hammered. Brashears says some overfishing can be blamed on small-scale and large-scale operations that are based in Ghana, but more serious problems involve mechanized fleets that carry away huge amounts of fish for processing in Europe. Brashears says people in Ghana have turned to hunting because they don't have fish to eat or sell. Some of the hunting is illegal poaching inside game reserves, and a lot of it is simply unregulated. Brashears says the hunting has become as serious as the overfishing.
The kinds of species that we see declining most are certainly the large carnivores, so things like lion and hyena and leopard, and then many primates like black and white colobus monkeys, and certainly chimpanzees, and then several large, these you know, great herbivores like the elephant and hippopotamus. And so these are some of the larger mammals that seem to be struck most powerfully by this trade in wildlife, this consumption of wildlife.
Prasher says the best way to protect those animals is to provide people with other sources of food and to do a better job of managing the commercial fishery. His report was published in November in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Truth always deceiving, never believing in yourself.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, did you want to answer Matt's comment?
And then yeah,
we
let
got
me briefly
a couple
answer,
other,
Matt.
Couple other calls here.
I'm not in the Senate, Matt, so I really don't know the thinking. My guess is that the serious Democratic senators are trying to save their ammo, so to speak, for the really most important nominations, which will be the Supreme Court nominations from the president. The Republicans have the votes, essentially, to seat anybody they want. I think what the Democrats are trying to do is expose the flaws in Bush's policy through the nominating process. But I think some of them say, well, if I vote no on every nominee, when I vote no on the Supreme Court nominee, or I oppose that, people will say, what's new? You always vote no.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's kind of what they're thinking is about.
Waiting to make a statement. Okay, Rick in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'll probably get kicked off the air here, but I had to air a couple of things. Congressman, you mentioned the Social Security Trust Fund, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't believe that there is one and hasn't been one since the mid-60s. Number two is talking about the president and the Veterans Administration. There's very, very little that the president can do about the Veterans Administration. I believe that is in your hands as a congressman.
I'm sorry, say that again, Rick. I didn't hear that.
He's saying Congress appropriates the budget.
Okay. All right, let me answer Rick's question, and then stay on the line, Rick, because I want to dialogue. The president can do everything about the Veterans Administration, including putting forward a good budget. But if Rick is saying it's not just the president, but it's the Republican leadership in Congress, there's truth to that as well. But there's no question that both the president and the Republican leadership are turning their backs on veterans. But if the president put forth a strong budget and said he wants to make sure that our veterans get the health care and benefits they're entitled to, he certainly can do that. In terms of the Social Security Trust Fund, there's some confusion here. Yes, money has been borrowed from the Social Security Trust Fund. That money is borrowed with federal
Treasury bonds.
Treasury bonds, which are the safest form of investment in the history of humanity. So sometimes right-wingers say, oh, it's just an IOU. No, it's just not an IOU. The money is secure, it is sound, and the Social Security Trust Fund has enough money with incoming sums of money to pay out benefits for the next 47 years.
Okay, well said. Rick, thanks for that call. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Have
Thank
a
you.
Great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Telling the truths that multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know about and weren't thinking about and probably didn't tell your friends about. But here we are.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, it's sad that the Bushites have not been able to provide protective armor for all of our troops in Iraq, resulting in untold numbers of needless deaths and maimings. But, well, the Pentagon has other priorities, such as playing with its Star Wars toys. There recently was another test to this boondoggle. The scheme is that the military industry can build a whiz-bang technological wonder that will allow a U.S. missile to be fired at an incoming enemy missile and shoot it out of the air. So far, the Pentagon has shoveled $80 billion into this smoke and mirrors stunt, with another $50 billion to be thrown at it in the next 5 years. I say smoke and mirrors because it doesn't work. And nearly all independent experts say it won't ever work, and it isn't even needed. Indeed, the Pentagon even rigged its previous tests, including putting beacons on the target missile so their Star Wars missile can find it easily. Yet it still doesn't hit the target. The latest test was especially embarrassing. Instead of merely missing the target, this one couldn't even get off the ground. Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld, however, is undeterred, saying that critics who claim that his pet project doesn't work are misguided because, quote, what the definition of work is terribly important. Okay, Donnie, try this small dose of reality. Your system is so flawed that it cannot be fired if the weather is bad. Excuse my skepticism, but it's at least possible that an enemy might not wait for a perfectly clear, calm day to take a shot at us. This is Jim Hightower saying, the main thing that the Bushites' highly touted missile defense system can be counted on to hit is the federal budget. But they don't care, for it's all being deficit financed, paid in IOUs that our grandchildren will have to pay. Long after the Bushites are gone and their Star Wars scam has been assigned to the scrap heap of ridiculous waste, is there no other need in America that we could spend this money on?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. A lot of punditry about yesterday's state of inaugural address, excuse me, George Bush's second inaugural address. You know, what was he really saying? What did he really mean? What was he really talking about? What's going on with this thing? What can we figure out for the future? And I'll tell you, as much as Americans are curious about what he meant by some of the things he said, there are people in other countries around the world who are far more concerned and perhaps have good right to be. First of all, let's just look at a couple of these things. First of all, in his speech, he said, from the day of our founding, we have proclaimed that every man and woman on this earth has rights. Rights. Every man and woman on this earth. Except for the roughly 1,000, although we really don't know because the number is now classified. They stopped telling us after 2002, toward the end of 2002. But at that point, it was over 1,000 people, including a couple of American citizens like Jose Padilla and Hamdi, Yasser Hamdi, I think his name was. Except for them, they don't have rights. Why don't they have rights? Well, because the president said so. No, I'm not making this up. Historically, there have been two categories of people who can be prosecuted or held to account for crimes. Those who committed crimes against society, and we call them criminals, or even crimes against humanity, we call them war criminals. And they have the right to be faced by their accusers, to have evidence presented both against them and to exonerate them, and the right of the assumption of innocence until proven guilty, number one. And number two, prisoners of war. And prisoners of war actually have to get a little better treatment than prisoners who are held for, you know, as potential criminals. And the reason for that is because when we want to make sure that when our guys get taken prisoner of war, which is going to happen, that they're treated well by the other side. As Doonesbury pointed out in Gary Trudeau in the Doonesbury strip, I think it was today's strip, how did we get through World War II? I mean, 50 million people died in World War II. How did we get through this horrific war without resorting to torture? Wasn't that a new kind of war? Without resorting to disappearing people, you know, behaving like Argentina. But not modern-day Argentina, but Argentina 30 years ago. So you've got this. Bush saying everybody has rights and then saying, but we want Alberto Gonzalez to be confirmed as Attorney General, who has said, no, I'm sorry, everybody doesn't have rights. If the president designates you as an enemy combatant, a term which has no legal status, there's no history for this term. They made it up during the Bush administration. If the president designates you as an enemy combatant, you no longer have rights under either the Constitution in the United States or under the Geneva Conventions, which are agreed to by most of the countries of the world, or under the United Nations Charter, which presumably covers, is supposed to cover the entire world. No rights. Sorry. He goes on to say, yet rights must be more than the grudging concessions of dictators. They are secured by free dissent and the participation of the governed. Free dissent, George Bush says. This is the definition of a right. You have free dissent. Then why is it that every time he stopped at a campaign stop, anybody who tried to dissent, if they didn't go into the cage, got arrested? The only human being that he mentioned in his entire speech, and frankly, I have to say, if my father had been president and then I was president, I would have at least given him some credit. I would have tipped my hat to him. But no, the only person that he named was Abraham Lincoln. And he said, the rulers of outlaw regimes can know we still believe as Abraham Lincoln did. Well, that's really interesting because Lincoln was an outspoken opponent of foreign entanglements. He loved to quote Jefferson and Washington. Bush says, by our efforts, we have lit a fire. Yeah. Yeah. And let's get George Washington's thoughts on this. This is George Washington's farewell address, delivered in 1796 as he was leaving office to be replaced by John Adams, the second president of the United States. And the first president to throw people in jail for speaking out against him. And really, for all practical purposes, the last president to do that until George W. Bush came along. But in any case, here's George Washington, the first George to rule America. We now have King George III. This was President George I. In his farewell address, he says, a passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils. This is part of his warning against foreign entanglements. He said, if we get involved with foreign nations too tightly, too closely, he says, it gives to ambitious, corrupted, or deluded citizens facility to betray or sacrifice the interests of their own country. Think of the millions and millions of dollars that Halliburton has already admitted to defrauding the government of. Gilding, George Washington said, with the appearances of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable deference for public opinion, or a laudable zeal for public good, the base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, or infatuation. George Washington went on to say, as avenues to foreign influence, in innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions? Keep in mind, Washington here is talking about using foreign policy as a political tool in the United States. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils? Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens. The jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, said George Washington. Excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike of another cause those whom they actuate to see danger only in one side and serve to veil and even second the arts of influence on the other. Real patriots, George Washington said, who may resist the intrigues of the favorite, are liable to become suspected or odious, while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interests. Think of Saudi Arabia and the Bush family. The great rule of conduct for us, said George Washington, in regard to foreign nations, is in extending our commercial relations to have with them as little political connection as possible. So far as we have already formed engagements, let them be fulfilled with perfect good faith. Here, let us stop. Then he goes on to say how we really need to be rooted in domestic policy. He said, if we remain one people under an efficient government, the period is not far off when we may defy material injury from external annoyance. In other words, if we become self-reliant, if we were to develop, for example, solar and wind energy, so we didn't need Saudi Arabia's oil, then, to quote George Washington, we may defy material injury from an external annoyance. He goes on to say, why forego the advantages of so peculiar a situation? Why quit our own to stand upon foreign ground? In other words, why leave America to fight a war in some other way? Why, George Washington asks, by interweaving our destiny with that of any part of Europe, entangle our peace and prosperity in the toils of European ambition, rivalship, interest, humor, or caprice? It is our true policy to steer clear of permanent alliances with any portion of the former world, of the foreign world, excuse me. And he goes on, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Read, if you want to get a eye-opening education, see, read George Washington's farewell address. It was, in all probability, by the way, ghostwritten by James Madison. Not by John Adams, no. Madison, it is believed, wrote most of George Washington's works. In my opinion, what George Bush was saying yesterday is we are now the empire. We now rule the world. We are going to use the words freedom and liberty to justify our actions, even when those actions mean doing things such as sucking up to China, sucking up to Vladimir Putin, sucking up to the Saudi royal family, being there for Musharraf in Pakistan. Forging a strategic partnership like we signed last year with Uzbekistan, who's, the State Department in its annual human rights report, says the Washington Post, has cited Uzbekistan for its very poor human rights record, including the torture and civilian and killing of citizens in custody for purely political reasons. There's virtually no freedom of speech or of press. This is now our good buddy. Why? They've got oil, and they're next to the Middle East. They are strategic. Billy in Santa Cruz on the line. Hey, Billy, what's on your mind?
Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you. And to you too, my friend.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about two subjects, mostly about communication. Our president communicated to us yesterday about freedom. You know, he tested the word freedom, and he found that was safe. And liberty.
Yep. 27 freedoms and 15 liberties. One every 30 seconds. No Iraqs. Not
okay.
One.
So Tom, here's what we've learned about this president and this country. When we go to free you and give you liberty, quote unquote, and your people are getting killed,
remember, you'll never be mentioned again.
Yeah.
You'll be left out. You'll be ignored. The truth of what is going on will be made quiet, and propaganda will exist.
Billy, welcome to George Orwell's world. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't do this if kids in school were still required to read 1984.
Now that brings up the other subject.
We've got about 20 seconds.
Michael Powell is stepping down?
Yeah, I just got the bulletin. I'm waiting to find out who's going to replace him.
Will I be able to speak my mind on this station like I felt like good in the past month or two?
We'll find out. Michael Powell is going away. Billy, thanks for the call. We're out of time here. That was announced this morning, just this morning. More to come on that. No doubt Howard Stern is smiling. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. Ellen Ratner on the line with the Talk Radio News Service from Washington, D.C. Ellen, did I get it straight that yesterday George W. Bush became the first president in the history of the United States to assert that we have the right to remake any other country in the world simply because we don't like their form of government?
That is how I read the speech. Yep.
This is, I was just reading from George Washington's farewell address where he was saying the exact opposite. Don't do that. Don't go there.
You know what's fascinating is that even Peggy Noonan, Reagan's speechwriter, dumped all over Bush.
Yeah, I was.
I mean, when you have
astounded.
The right dumping on him, you know he went over the line.
Yeah, it's.
Not us. It's them, too.
It's.
And let me tell you something else that just happened in Washington. They are confirming that. Michael Powell is gone from the FCC, so let me give
right.
you
so,
that Washington did, interpretation.
Did Sinclair offer him Sinclair Broadcasting offer him $1 million a year as a for the assistant vice president?
I have
of
no
government
idea,
relations?
But I will tell you this: the interpretation is Colin Powell made a deal when he became Secretary of State. Now that Colin Powell and Bush are on the out, Bush is firing his son. Period. End of state.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. It hadn't even occurred to me. That cronyism and nepotism could be that blatant, and yet
why else would they have ever hired Michael Powell? I mean,
yeah,
he's
totally
unqualified. He's got nothing to say for himself.
Well, and in fact, when he was first interviewed by one of the trade publications, you may remember this. When he was first nominated, he said, "I don't know anything about communications law or policy." I mean, he came right out and said he didn't know anything about what the FCC did. Yeah. Remarkable. So what else is going on in Washington? What are your thoughts
on
this?
Okay, the only other interesting thing is that Howard Dean is surging in the DNC race, and all the other people are trying to get behind Frost to stop it.
Oh, interesting. And do you think that Dean had an un-inaugural last night in Burlington, Vermont, in fact. He did a bunch
of house parties.
Yeah, and he was in the papers today, and he's really kicking butt. I mean, he's out there speaking out and speaking loud. In fact, he says the former governor said the overwhelming majority of Americans care about three fundamental issues: jobs, economic security, and education. Dean says it seems to me that this is the central message of the Democratic Party. We're a party that believes in balanced budgets and that it's a moral value not to pass on the cost of your debt to your children. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that in any way, shape, or form. And one last little tell you, Senator Lieberman is now saying he's regretting the delay on the Rice nomination.
Yeah, Joe Lieberman is, three steps behind Zell Miller. He's just, I mean, I'm just looking back on it now. Yeah, almost relieved that he didn't become our vice president. It's Joe Lieberman has become such a Republican. Of course, he's from Connecticut. I mean, it was Roger Griswold of Connecticut who with his cane in 1798 beat Lyon. I'm forgetting his first name, the congressman from Vermont, because Lyon on the Matthew Lyon on the floor of the House said that the good congressman from Connecticut was only interested in the interests. Was only speaking and acting, legislating in behalf of the interests of the wealthy of Connecticut. And here we are, 200 years later. It's still going on, right?
Exactly. Well, Bush attended a prayer service this morning, and most of us were praying that he wouldn't go any more over the line than he already has.
Yeah,
I think our prayers are in vain, Tom.
Yeah, or that some of these scandals will seep out and come back to bite him the way that they did Richard Nixon, who was actually reelected with a higher approval rating than Bush. This is strange times we live in, Ellen. Ellen, thank you so much for the report.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you today, and we will talk with you on Monday. Have a great weekend. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, transforming the world. The world? Is that what Bush said? Okay, transforming America by revitalizing democracy. No, as America goes, the world goes. We can do better by being an example than by being a bully. 29 minutes past the hour.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Secondhand news is sometimes the best kind because, you know, somebody else figured it out for you. It's time for our best of the rest of the news segment. Friday afternoon here. Let's hear from a couple of editors of online publications that may have some unique perspectives, interesting insights, thoughtful thoughts, comments, and whatnot. Today we have Rob Call with opednews.com, opednews.com. And Gonzo Schechsnyder, who's the managing editor of BuzzFlash. Hey, Gonzo.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Tom.
Glad to have you both here. Let me start out with you, Gonzo. What at BuzzFlash.com, what did you see as the top issue or story of this week that's just now wrapping up?
Well, I think that the fact that the Dems are actually going to talk for 9 hours about the Gonzales Rice nominations, it would be really nice to see something substantial come out of that. I think it's got implications that could be important for the next 4 years. If they actually stand up and say something important and really make it difficult or completely, you know, reject the nominations, which I doubt, but how they handle this is really going to sort of play out how they're going to handle the rest of this term.
Yeah. Now, Gonzo, we had Bernie Sanders on in the previous hour. He's on every Friday as a regular and the independent congressman. And he said that his Democrat, he's not a Democrat, but he said that his friends who are Democrats have said that the Democratic strategy, and he didn't comment on whether he thought this was smart or dumb. It seems nuts to me, but I'd like to get your take on it and what you think, everybody else, you know, how people are responding to this in the among your listeners, your readers, rather, that the Democratic strategy is that if they say no to everything, if they're constantly, you know, no to this, no to that, no to Rice, no to, you know, voting against everything in sight, and that this may be the justification that, for example, Barack Obama would use to justify why he is voting on the committee in favor of confirming Rice, that when the really big one comes, which is going to be the outrageous Supreme Court justice that Bush is going to try and push through, that's going to be his legacy, that everybody will say, well, they just voted no on everything, and therefore we shouldn't take it all that seriously. And so they want it to be perceived as a big deal. Do you think that makes any sense?
No, only because they can still say no to outrageous Supreme Court justices. But, I mean, anybody who votes for Gonzales is basically condoning torture. That's pretty much it. There's no way to get around that. I mean, you pretty much say if you allow Gonzales in, you're saying, hey, torture is okay for the U.S. And you just can't say that. I mean, you know, you just can't. It's just there's some things to stand by. And so if they let Gonzales in, I don't care how big the thing comes after it, it's not going to have any meaning.
Yeah. I'm absolutely in agreement with you there, and I'm just horrified, frankly, that the Democrats can't even just remember back 20 years ago to what Newt Gingrich was doing, where he was saying no to everything and actually getting his way. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It actually works to take a principled stand. I mean, Newt, in my opinion, was wrong on the issues, but he had his belief system. You know, his poor, who cares about them? It's a tax cut for the rich. That's what's important. Six out of the 10 points of the contract with America basically boiled down to tax cuts for the rich. And he was just absolutely tenacious. And I mean, Bill Clinton got what he calls his economic growth package, what the Republicans called a tax increase, passed without one single Republican vote. But they don't get it. They don't get it.
And they have a great soundbite with Gonzales, too. I mean, it's pretty easy to understand that a vote for Gonzales is a vote for torture. You know, and I don't think a lot of people, a lot of their constituents, are going to necessarily agree with them. So
yeah, okay.
You know,
Gonzo, the managing editor of BuzzFlash.com. Let's go to Rob Call of OpEdNews.com. Rob, what do you see as the largest story or stories of the week that has just wrapped up?
Well, it made me think of Ross Perot's line about that sucking sound.
The giant sucking sound from the South.
Well, I saw it as a giant sucking sound of the mainstream media spinelessly sucking up to the Bush administration. This whole inauguration was just one more sign that there are fewer and fewer spines left in the media and of journalists who are actually going to do their job and not just say how wonderful everything is.
Yeah,
I wrote a piece this past week about the biggest enemy that democracy has, the Democrats have, that the progressives have, are the mainstream media.
Hmm. Yeah,
they are the number one enemy that this country is facing right now in their failure to do their job.
And of course,
now today we're finding out Michael Powell is leaving.
Yeah.
You know, you got to wonder, who are they going to put in who's going to be worse than him?
Yeah.
A lobbyist or a corporate officer for Clear Channel or for Murdoch's or one of his companies or Fox TV. You know, yeah. It's your guess, but you know it's going to be somebody like that.
Isn't the larger
it's going to be another Fox guarding the hen house?
Yeah, isn't the larger issue though, Rob, the issue of corporate consolidation in general? I mean, the media wouldn't have consolidated the way it has. I mean, you've got magazines consolidating; they're not regulated by anybody except the post office. In terms of the postal rate that they pay when they mail those things. So we do subsidize magazines. We subsidize newspapers in the United States because we think news is so important. And historically, we have exercised some regulation over the ownership of them in exchange for that subsidy. We're continuing the subsidy, with the third and fourth class postal rates, but we're no longer exercising any management over ownership. Because ever since Reagan, we've stopped enforcing the Sherman Act, and we're just allowing corporations to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And isn't media consolidation just part of the larger issue of corporate consolidation overall, which is wiping out small and medium-sized businesses, has changed our economy from one where when you and I were growing up, people, you know, many of my friends, you know, their parents owned a local small business, and that in some cases it was a small business that had been in the family for two or three generations. People no longer start small businesses with the idea of that anymore. They start them with the idea of selling it off to some great big corporation as soon as they can before they get squashed like a bug. I mean, we've completely changed the paradigm of business in America because we've stopped enforcing the Sherman Act.
We have to really start thinking about there's small business, and then there's the transnational mega corporation. And the small business, that's where innovation, that's where jobs are created. The big business, it's a foreign country.
Yeah, and then to bring it back around to what you said, and now big business owns the vast majority of all of our media.
But I think it's two issues. One of them is the problem of big business getting bigger and bigger and corporate personhood that you wrote about so well in your book. But the other is dealing with the media. I think there are solutions to that that can take place a lot easier dealing just with the media side of things than there are with the bigger person of the whole corporate change.
For example, what's the solution that you would have in mind?
Well, I think that I think if we raised the kind of money that we did for our sellout Kerry, another spineless guy I'm pretty disappointed with, I think that we could maybe come up with enough money to get a majority interest in a network.
So you're talking about beating them at their own game.
Yeah, or, the whole talk, there's a lot of talk about boycotts, and I think boycotts are an interesting concept that are one stepping stone on a path towards using the leverage and control that we have as consumers to push advertisers to spend money on programs like yours and the other progressive programs as well.
Yeah, I may be wrong, but I don't think the boycotts have ever the threat of boycotts, I suppose, was successful. Actually, I'm not even sure it was the threat of a boycott with the, for example, the Reagan movie with CBS. I think it was just the general level of outrage that was expressed.
Some good success with the Sinclair network. The threat of boycott led to over 100 different companies either pulling their ads altogether or not running them on the day that they were going to run that anti-Kerry show. And just recently, there's been an announcement about Staples on that, too. It is possible that
Staples has backed away from that.
You don't want to ask them to, but it's not a matter of not buying products. It's a matter of, buy from a blue company.
Yeah.
And then write a letter to the company that gave money to the Republicans. Like a good example I give is Dell Computers. Michael Dell was the Republican chair in Texas for the 2000 Bush candidacy. Dell gave $250,000 to the inauguration. Now, I'm not going to buy from Dell unless I see them start spending money on your show and Air America Radio and the other progressive media.
Yeah,
see contributions to the Democratic
Party.
And it's interesting
how either the New York Times or the Washington Post did this huge fluff piece on how Dell is manufacturing here in the United States, when actually what they're doing is they're assembling Chinese-made product, components here in the United States and calling it manufacturing. And that if you call the Dell helpline, which they advertise, gee, they're open 24/7, 365, you get somebody in India. But, anyhow, let's move along.
One more thing, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Two more pieces of news. One, I see two or three people that they're setting up to be in the 2008 race. One is Condoleezza Rice. the history of presidents has a good number of secretaries of state becoming president.
Yeah, Thomas
now
Jefferson.
Now that's not as likely.
Yeah.
You get into too much trouble being secretary of state, but it would set her up as an interesting position as a vice president.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you saw all these shots of Bush being sworn in, right behind him was Rick Santorum.
Yeah, Rick
my
is
state senator.
Yeah, Rick is climbing the ladder fast, and he's on the fast track. Rob, thanks for that. Let's go back to Gonzo with BuzzFlash.com. Gonzo, what are the topics that you're seeing on the horizon here? And by the way, what we haven't talked so much about the inaugural. What are your thoughts on the inaugural, and then what do you see coming up for next week?
You know, when I think of the inaugural, I think of, I forget her name, the contributing editor for Vanity Fair was on Fox, and I think Oliver Willis has a video of it on his site, where they bring this woman on to talk about the inauguration and how opulent it is, and she basically tells them all that it's a big waste of money and they should be spending
money on armor
for the Humvees.
In fact, Gonzo, let me just play a little bit of that clip, because that is really quite remarkable.
It is.
Judy Bachrach, contributing editor at Vanity Fair magazine. Judy, welcome to you. We were noticing all the snow in Washington.
And see, this poor newswoman just thinks that she's just going to have this fluff interview and listen to her get nailed.
Well, it's really coming down. I hope that doesn't put a crimp in anybody's plans. Look at that gorgeous shot of the White House.
Well, I have a feeling that maybe it should put a crimp, or at least something should put a crimp in the plans of the White House to have such a very lavish inaugural at the time of war.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
What I've noticed is the worse a war is going, the more lavish the inaugural festivities. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt was president, during a time of war, of course, as you know, he had a very modest inauguration and a very tiny party where he served chicken salad, or where chicken salad was served. And that was when we were winning a war.
Right. The president has addressed this, hasn't he? He said that this is we're celebrating
yeah.
democracy. We're celebrating a peaceful transfer of democracy. What's wrong with doing that?
Wrong question.
Any peace or any transfer of democracy in Iraq? If you have, you're the first person to have seen it.
Election is coming up. And
on it goes. It goes on and on like that. And it's just, right.
The turning point was when she was like, really? Okay?
Yeah, I know.
Where is this going to go?
Uh-oh.
it's brilliant. Everyone should see that, just to see how someone can go on an anti-democracy media outlet and have some very strong, very sincere talking points and get the message out.
Yeah,
can be done.
Yeah. It's that was remarkable. What else do you see coming up?
I'd like to see. I mean, I think the Social Security thing is going to. I know it's going to have some sticking points with the web community because the information is out there, and there's a new site. And forgive me, it's notacrisis.com.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
I'll have to check it, but there's a website out there. About that, about the issues, and it has.
It just lays out the actual numbers and statistics and injects
some
reality.
Yeah, the good and the bad, and it basically puts out the truth. You know, it points out the truth. I think the Social Security issue is going to start taking on some traction just because Bush is rolling it out as a product, and it should be a real seminal issue for the Dems. It should be a real point, a very important part of it, because it's like their main. The main thing we have right now.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, this burned Reagan's fingers. I mean, he tried to grab hold of it, and he let go real fast. So we'll see how that comes out. And any long-term predictions or anything that we may not know is coming along that you're getting a sense of here? Gonzo.
I don't know. I have a feeling the deaths in Iraq and the numbers coming out of Iraq as far as wounded and the real numbers, the numbers of civilian deaths, all that stuff, I think, as if we start pulling away after the elections, and I don't think we are in a meaningful way, I think some of the real numbers are going to start coming out of Iraq. And when those numbers, when the numbers of deaths of Americans and foreign soldiers and civilians start really penetrating the media, I think that He's already, 36%,
yeah.
Only 36% think that he's doing
so
a good job.
So you see a change coming in that. It's a change in public opinion. Rob Call with opednews.com. We've got about a minute left, a little less than that. A quickie, anything you see on the horizon?
Oh, yeah, Michael Jackson's in trouble. You know, Michael Jackson has been one of the big distraction points for the media, and I think he's got a competitor now. SpongeBob.
Yeah, okay. So,
James Dobson, these will be the new hands with his friends. He's too gay.
There you go. These will be the new things that are going to distract us from the Bush administration. Gonzo Schechtschneider and Rob Call, opednews.com and buzzflash.com. Thank you both for being with us today. Best of the rest of the news. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Some plants that desperately need to save water are quite generous in giving it away. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cactus that live in the desert need to conserve all their resources to survive. So scientists became curious when they saw a barrel cactus that seemed to be giving water away to the ants that were crawling all over it. The water is nectar that's rich with sugar. Joshua Ness says the sugar gets the ants jacked up on carbohydrates, and that makes them hungry for meat. Ness is an ecologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson. He says the ants satisfy their craving for meat by eating other insects on the cactus, insects that would otherwise chew up the cactus itself.
If you give them sugar, it eventually sort of requires that they go out and forage for meat, just like if we were to eat cake all day, eventually we'd want something a little more substantial. So indirectly what we see then is that the more sugar these ants eat, the more aggressive they become, the more carnivorous or meat hungry. And what we find is that the most effective ant bodyguards are the ones that are the most meat hungry. So if we compare those different species in terms of their abilities to attack caterpillars or their willingness to do so, what we find is that the really sugar-hungry species don't do a particularly good job, but the meat-hungry species do.
Ants need to eat different types of food to maintain a proper balance of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. The nectar from the cactus gives them a lot of carbohydrates that might be pushing this ratio out of line and prompting them to eat more meat to bring it back into balance. Ness and a team of researchers studied four species of ants in a cactus that's common in the Sonoran Desert. Ness says their findings are particularly interesting because they show how the ants provide an important service to the plant as long as they get their reward. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
And welcome back. This is a question many folks are asking with regard to George W. Bush. He's talking about, we are hearing the call from beyond the stars to spread democracy. And I got an email here from Tracy, who says, we need to decipher this. He wants the sheepy to believe it's God. But as far as I know, he's writes Tracy, the Pope does not think that Bush is doing right. And, yeah, that's correct. The Pope has condemned the war in Iraq, which is something that I was surprised wasn't made more use of by Catholic Kerry during the campaign. I think he was trying to be above religion, which is, but in any case, the Pope has said, or the Pope's people anyway, on behalf of the Pope have said, no, the war in Iraq was not a good thing. The invasion of Iraq was not a good thing. He was opposed to it before it happened. He was opposed to it when it happened, and he's still opposed to it. So if, and ever since the 19th century, and I believe it was only in the 19th century, I may be wrong, it might have been the 18th century, but only relatively recently, has this concept of papal infallacy been around? You know, this idea that whatever the Pope, but it's there. You know, that the Pope talks to God, and if God speaks through the... So apparently Bush and Pope are, and the Pope are not hearing from the same God. Or that voice from beyond the stars that Bush is talking about is not God. What might it be? Could it be the ghost chickens?
Ghost chickens in the sky.
Maybe. Ah, that's it. Yeah, it's ghost chickens in the... I don't know. What is way out there beyond the stars? I think maybe he's been talking to the Scientologists, frankly. Maybe it's the folks from the planet Theta. You know, that's the ultimate secret that you learn in Scientology after you spent all your thousands of dollars and got all cleared and you work your way through all the various levels. The ultimate secret is that 10,000 years ago, people from the planet Theta came and seeded the planet Earth with the human race. And that 10,000 years later, which is roughly now, they're going to come back in their spaceships and take away all the clear people, presumably meaning mentally clear. And therefore, you spend thousands to get clear in Scientology. Well, maybe Bush is talking about the Thetans, who are from beyond the stars, telling us to spread democracy all around the world. Yeah, I'm being facetious. I know that he's, but boy, this is just a, in my opinion, a horrible misuse of religion for foreign policy. It's just wrong. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Time to take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Today's feature, blue jeans. Even the rich like to dress down every now and then, and slipping into a comfy pair of jeans is perfect for puttering around the mansion or driving your Hummer out to pick up some truffles at the gourmet market. But alas, you're rich, and your social class requires that you meet certain standards of attire, so you can't just throw on a pair of common old Levi's like I wear.
Sure, you could upgrade to a pair of $150 designer jeans, but, well, they just don't have the panache that a person of your standing demands. Luckily, though, Calvin Stewart has stepped forward with just the jeans for you. The New York-based fashion designer has introduced an exclusive line that he calls APO Jeans. Each pair is made to order, matching a customer's specific measurements, waist, rump, thighs, ankles, and so forth. But that's just the start. APOs are made from a special denim costing $40 a yard, some 20 times the cost of the denim worn by us commoners. Still, denim is denim. What really sets your jeans apart is that Stewart will fully customize them for you, embellishing them with rivets and buttons made of gold, platinum, or other precious metals. We wanted to be the Mercedes-Benz of the denim industry, says Stewart. And so he is, complete with a price tag that starts at $1,000 a pair. To really strut your stuff, however, you might want to pay more than $4,000 a pair and get the ones that have a dozen sparkling diamonds embedded in the front button. You'll also be reassured to know that, in case anyone questions whether your jeans are truly special, Stewart provides a certificate of authenticity, an appraisal, and a born-on date for each pair of APOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, I wonder, can you just toss these things in the washer-dryer? Or do you have to take them to a Mercedes dealer for detailing?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. You are in the real free speech zone. No permits required. Wasn't it remarkable yesterday? George W. talking about how liberty and freedom and then well, you know, but if you want to protest outside a Bush rally, down the street from a Bush rally, on public property, you will go to jail. Yes, you will go to jail. Look at all the people that they arrested during the campaign. And these were not people who were disrupting his speech. They were merely within sight of the news media. Just within sight of the news media. And yet he goes on to say, yet rights must be more than the grudging concessions of dictators. They are secured by free dissent and the participation of the governed. George Washington is rolling over in his grave, I'll tell you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way. It's Friday afternoon. Pretty much anything you want to talk about is fine. I've got some interesting emails here. Got some a little more news to share with you. Our website, tomhartman.com, if you want to drop into our chat room. Chat room's fairly full of folks right now. Interesting. Some of the finest and most interesting conversations on the entire internet. You got to check it out. Let's go to Sheila in Colorado. Hey, Sheila, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to offer a clarification, if I could.
Certainly.
On what you said about the Pope.
Okay.
Hour.
Yeah.
The infallibility of the Pope, that only applies on those rare occasions when the Pope speaks ex cathedra.
Ex cathedra, that's right. You're right.
We've only done that, I think, two or three times, and that was only on, I think, the virgin birth of Christ and the Assumption of Mary.
Yeah.
That's the only...
And he has not spoken ex cathedra on the war in Iraq.
No.
So,
I don't think he would.
So apparently George W. Bush can hear directly from beyond the stars.
Well,
that it's a good thing, but the Pope can't. Or hasn't. God's talking to George and not to the Pope.
Yeah, that's beyond me.
Well, it sounds like that's what George is saying. It's George III here. He's saying that we have a calling from beyond the stars to spread democracy. And he's either talking about God or he's talking about space aliens, one or the other.
Well,
and the Pope disagrees with him, so...
Oh, I voted for John Kerry.
So you're not going to get in this fight, huh? Okay, well, thank you for the clarification, Sheila.
Thank you.
Ex cathedra, is that it?
Cathedra.
Cathedra.
Ex cathedra, from the chair.
From the chair. Ah, yes. Well, he has to be sitting in the chair and the whole hoop-de-doop. It's, you know, I met the Pope, must be 6 years ago. We were, I had written a book, and somehow a copy of it got to a person who puts together this annual thing that they have at Castle Gandolfo, where it's an interfaith thing. And they have a concert, and they bring in both Protestants and Catholics and folks of other religion, whatever. Mostly, I think it's just Protestants and Catholics. And
as far as I know, this Pope has never spoken ex cathedra.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, his chair was incredible. We were just sitting here in the house one day and the fax machine rings and this fax comes out that says you are invited to a private audience with His Holiness Pope John Paul II. And I'm like, you know, this has got to be a joke. It's a fax from Rome. And it turned out it was not a joke. And so Louise and I got on a plane and flew over to Rome and took the tour of the Vatican. But then, you know, went up to Castle Gandolfo, which is his summer palace. And sat about 20 feet from him for about 2 hours listening to a concert, and then went over and said hi to him, met him, shook his hand. They took our pictures. In fact, the picture of it's up on my website. And had a very brief conversation with him. And I tell you, it was a little startling because he's sitting in this giant chair that's gilded with gold, and behind him is a statue of St. Peter that was at least 10 or 12 feet tall. With a book in one hand and keys in the other. And obviously it's the book, you know, where all our names are written in it, the keys to heaven. And the pomp and ceremony and the Swiss guards and everything, it was just extraordinary, just absolutely extraordinary. And shaking this guy's hand, I'm not Catholic, so I didn't kiss his ring. The Catholics all bowed down and kissed his rings, and the Protestants shook his hand. And there were about 20 of us who had these private meetings with him. They call them audiences, but it's more like a, hi, how are you? And but his grip was, I mean, he was very frail, but his grip was very strong. And you got the sense that here is a man who, this is the last vestige of empire, of the Roman Empire. I mean, here's a man who, if he said 10 words, the right 10 words, could throw the world into war, and has in the past. I mean, not him, but his, you know, people in his office. So in the roughly 1800 year history of the Catholic Church. And or 1700, I guess, going back to the Second Council of Constantinople. And it was awesome. And to think that the George W. now, well, anyhow, I'm getting redundant. Sheila, thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thank
it. Good to hear from you. And thanks for, you know, keeping me up to date on Catholicism there. It's fascinating stuff. This, which brings up, you know, the whole thing of issues. Here now we have the latest distraction from the cons. I mean, it's like when they don't get enough attention, it's like children acting out sometimes. You know, when they don't get enough attention and they want to be in the media, then they start kicking and screaming and yelling and the latest thing that they're kicking and screaming and yelling about is,
are
of course,
reading?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I can't hear you.
Aye.
Oh, who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
Ah, yes.
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he.
little nonsense be something you wish.
SpongeBob
SquarePants! Then drop on the deck and flop like a fish.
SpongeBob
Ready?
SpongeBob
SquarePants!
SpongeBob SquarePants. The cons have now come out, and they've said that he is part of a determined effort, a conspiracy to make our children gay. All right, this is the latest rant out of the paranoid right, and it's tragic because the reality is that first of all, the reality is this: these guys have just gotten confused. There is the website that they were finding. This is a little different. There's the We Are Family Foundation, okay, WAFF. It was put together by Nile Rodgers. He's the guy who wrote the song, you know, We Are the World, and or We Are Family rather. And they're re-recording this thing as a cartoon. Keith Olbermann played it in its entirety last night on his news show on Countdown on MSNBC. And there's nothing, not frankly, that I, well, that's a whole other thing, but there was nothing gay about it anyway. I mean, this is just like total freak out paranoia. The problem is that there is an unrelated organization with a similar name to the We Are Family Foundation that is there to help gay kids who are having problems with their families. And apparently, these wackos at the, well, wackos. Well, yeah, anybody who's going to come out shooting like this. James Dobson, founder of the right-wing Christian group Focus on the Family, singled out SpongeBob at a black tie dinner in Washington in the run-up to President Bush's inauguration. I mean, he says... Conservatives see the video as a cunning attempt to promote homosexuality. Had they seen it? No. No, they hadn't. And but Paul Batura of Focus on the Family says, we see the video as an insidious means by which the organization, that would be the We Are Family Foundation, a group that is trying to educate kids that black people, white people can hang out together. Maybe Focus on the Family doesn't like that. I mean, Bob Jones University was strongly against that for the vast majority of its existence. Only recently was forced to change. Anyhow, we see the video as an insidious means by which the organization is manipulating and potentially brainwashing kids, says Paul Batura of Focus on the Family. So, Mark Barondeso, the spokesman for WAFF, the We Are Family Foundation, says that anyone who thinks that this video promotes homosexuality, quote, needs to visit their doctor and get their medication increased. I would say, really, they need to visit the doctor and get a different medication. I'm not sure that I want these guys increasing the dose of meds that they're on, whatever it is. But what this brings up, again, to get back to my original point, what this brings up is the whole idea of distraction, keeping America distracted from the real issues. There's a Social Security crisis. In 40 years, it'll only pay 80% of benefits. Therefore, it's a crisis now. Well, you know, the crisis, of course, is that there's $937 billion in fees that Wall Street can make if they were to handle the Social Security Trust Fund. That's a crisis from the point of view of the Bush administration. But the bigger point here, and the whole thing with the SpongeBob SquarePants, is the whole idea of creating these phony crises to divert us away from what's really going on. For example, in Florida, George Bush, according to the vote, now there's a bunch of voting machines down there that I don't frankly trust, so who knows, but according to the voting machines, George W. Bush carried Florida handily in November. No problem, he won the vote. But there was also something on the ballot, a little initiative to raise the minimum wage in the state from $5.15 an hour to $6.15 an hour. That initiative That one little, this one little thing, 72% to 28%, it won by in the state of Florida. Not only did it win the entire state of Florida, it took every single county in Florida, even the most Republican, the most conservative counties in the state of Florida. We have a real crisis in America, a real crisis in America of unemployment, underemployment, uninsurance, you know, lack of insurance, underinsurance. Story in the Today's paper about a family that has insurance and still can't afford the extra fees to be hundreds of thousands of dollars for their daughter to get a liver transplant that will save her life. This is a crisis. 20 minutes past the hour. On the True People's Radio.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hello, Mama. It's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying.
Yeah.
Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good and I'm praying.
Yes, welcome back. You caught this the other day. A reporter asked George Bush, why have we not been able to find Osama bin Laden? And George Bush answered, because he's hiding. That has to ranks as one of the most profound comments of the year, I suppose. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. And Ed in California is on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, he's hiding.
That's what he said. Honest to God, that is what he said. The reporter said, Mr. Bush, why has it been so difficult for us to find Osama bin Laden? And George Bush said, because he's hiding. It was one of those meetings that he had with the press in the last week. You know, it's one of the interviews. I forget which one.
Getting back to your problem with SpongeBob, I've never wanted to wear a T-shirt as much as I do right now.
Yeah.
And I'm married 36 years to a girl I've known since fourth grade. So.
Well, here's the bottom line. That, you know, there's no problem because SpongeBob is not gay to begin with. I mean, he's just a cartoon character. In fact, I'm not even, you know, to the extent that cartoon characters have gender, I suppose he's portrayed as a male, isn't he? He's a Bob. But
I don't know. I'm too old to watch it.
Yeah, I've never seen. Well, I saw a little bit of it last night, actually, for the first time. Now that the flap is up.
You know, but is it
no
distraction or fear that they want to cause? I mean,
well, it's
back
both, of course.
A few years ago, it was the Teletubbies were gay.
Yeah. See,
and before that, it was, well, remember Jesus Freaks in the 60s? I don't know where they went, by the way. There was problems with that. There was communism. Remember, in the 50s, they had a problem with comic books.
Yeah. You know, what I think there's a three different forces here at play. Number one, it's freaky, so it makes good news, so it gets play in the media. Number two, that is the accusation. It's just kind of freakish. And so it's outrageous, and outrageous stuff plays. Number two, you've got organizations that want to get, you know, they want to get more publicity. They want a grandstand. I mean, if they can figure out a way to get the press. I mean, this happens on the right and the left. It's, you know, Al Franken's screaming match with Bill O'Reilly was probably the best thing that ever happened to his career. It got replayed over and over and over again for months, you know, on TV.
Yeah.
So anytime somebody does something outrageous, as long as it's not, you know, being charged with a crime, as long as somebody does, and actually even that worked well for Ollie North and for G. Gordon Liddy, you know, catapulted, gave them new careers. But as long as you can do something outrageous, you can get into the media, you can get into the news. And so there's that. And then there's the fact that the cons love this because it distracts people from the economic disaster around us. And the social disaster, which they're trying to profit from. And then finally, there is the issue that you raised, which is the issue of demagoguery, of trying to scare people and promote actually hate, in my opinion. It's, you know, raise people's hate comes out of fear. Hate is the product of fear.
I haven't heard anybody complaining about what they did in Ohio about the taking the rights away from the women and men and women who were living together.
What do you mean the passing?
Passing the thing against the gay initiative, or the gay marriage, but then taking the rights away from, you know, and nobody's standing up and screaming, what are you doing here?
Yeah, well, see, there was an interesting discussion about that right after the election where gay groups were like, you know, do we fight this battle or do we not? And I think that they broadly decided that it was a battle that they couldn't win, or at least not now. Now was not the time. So, you know, it's difficult times. I mean, here we have the president of the United States on record as saying that he wants to write into the Constitution for the first time in history discrimination. Now, you can argue that, you know, slavery was in the Constitution to begin with. But I mean, this is adding discrimination to the Constitution as an amendment. And for some reason, it's not getting traction as outrageous, as absolutely outrageous that he would want to do that. And then, as you said, Ed, you've got these guys demagoguing this thing. Thanks for the call, Ed. Good to hear from you. And hope you have a good Friday. Good weekend. Yeah, this is strange times we live in. It's very strange times. And I guess that's what makes it so interesting. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
We will give our fellow Americans greater freedom from want and fear and make our society more prosperous and just and equal.
While President George W. Bush gave his inauguration speech and laid out his hopes for the next 4 years, protesters who disagree with his policies and plans held a counter-inauguration nearby. The main protest was hosted by ANSWER, a national organization that is demanding an end to the war and racism. Brian Becker, national coordinator for the organization, highlighted a recent coordination between Unite Here and ANSWER in helping hotel workers in Washington, D.C., who had been without a contract for more than 2 years, get the hotels to the bargaining table and sign off on a contract that met the workers' standards. Becker says it was an important moment because it shows how organizations working together can define the direction of the Bush mandate.
46 or 47 million people can't go to a doctor when they're sick because health care in America is for profit rather than to cure the sick. The mandate must be not just some health care. It must be health care for all.
Another win for workers as CUNA Mutual Credit Union loses to the union at the National Labor Relations Board and in a corporate campaign. The Office and Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU, has been told by CUNA Mutual that the company will agree to stop illegal labor practices like spying on the union, bad faith bargaining, and threatening employees with lockouts and layoffs in response to the union's successful corporate campaign. OPEIU Local 39 business manager John Peterson says with this win, workers at the company in Madison, Wisconsin will go back into talks with the company to settle new contract terms.
We're planning to sit down with the company very soon, next week or so, to negotiate, hopefully, a conclusion to this very long contract negotiations.
Marty Beal, executive director of AFSCME Council 24, representing 24,000 state workers in Wisconsin, says that Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle is refusing to allow mediation to resolve new state employee contracts.
Apparently, the governor has been having tea with the governors of Missouri and Indiana because he took a very anti-union, anti-state employee position. It's pretty callous on his part.
Beal says there are serious unresolved issues and a mediator could help break the impasse.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Where in the country do companies consider the best place to expand or relocate? Nashville, Tennessee. A new report from expansionmanagement.com asked 80 corporate site location consultants to choose the 50 best cities in the U.S. 350 companies have relocated their corporate headquarters to Nashville over the past 4 years. Following Nashville on the list are Atlanta, Kansas City, Missouri, and Charlotte, North Carolina. The list is dominated by southern and western cities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burka, head on down to Lawyer Jurga, poke around all day at the Sharia court. I should be in heaven behind 9/11, by now at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered, and to do that, you need to get caught.
Oh, poor Osama, he just can't get himself caught.
Tired of waiting around for the bushes. I pass the time, I do what I can.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. 26 minutes before the hour. I just want to wrap this up. This is a moment for the Democrats that they cannot let pass. There are actually two of them. The first is this whole minimum wage issue. And the second is the whole issue of the fact that yesterday George W. Bush declared that we are an empire, that we rule the world, that we will assert that we are asserting our right because a voice from beyond the stars told him to change the form of government of any government in the world because it will make us more safe. Now, it is true. I'll deal with that. I'll come back to the minimum wage thing. It is true, and I actually wrote a book about this. It's called What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. It is true that in the history of democracy, the last 200 years more or less, there is no record of two fully democratic nations ever going to war with each other. The reason why? Because in a fully democratic nation, the people would not tolerate a leader who led them to war for no good reason. You know, in other words, if they hadn't been attacked. And the people would not allow a leader to attack others. Now, this causes some folks to scratch their head and say, well, but that would assume that the leader would be telling the truth to the people, and that if the leader lied to the people, that the leader would kick the people would kick the leader out, right? I mean, certain amount of logic there. And here we have Condi Rice. She lied to us. George W. Bush lied to us. We know now that within the CIA, there were major, major elements within the CIA, high up in the CIA, many of them just recently fired, who were saying all along, there's no weapons of mass destruction in Iran, in Iraq. There's nothing there. We know there's nothing there. You had a UN weapons inspection team that was there for 6 or 7 years after the Gulf War. And they went all over the country and found everything that they could find and destroy and just very successfully destroyed everything with regard to weapons of mass destruction. Scott Ritter was the head of that team. He worked for the United Nations, a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, just like Ollie North, a registered Republican. And he said, there's nothing there. We whacked it all. We destroyed it all. And they were very thorough. And then, you know, the UN comes along and says, okay, prove to us you've got nothing. And Saddam Hussein hands over 14,000 pages of documentation. And the U.S. goes through and eliminates about 5,000 or 6,000 of those pages. Why? Because presumably those are the pages where they talk about when Rumsfeld was selling them weapons and when Bush Sr. was selling them weapons. And because you'll recall, right after, just a few weeks, maybe a month or two after, Saddam is said to have gassed the Kurds. And there's still some debate about that because they were in the middle of this battle between Iraq and Iran, and it may have been the Iranians. But let's say it was Saddam and Iraq. They were physically in that area. That just a few weeks or a few months after that, Don Rumsfeld goes over to Iraq and shakes hands with Saddam Hussein. It's on TV. And we sell him more stuff. He was our buddy. Iran was our enemy. Although what Saddam didn't know is we were also providing Iran with satellite intelligence. I mean, go figure. This was, of course, under the Ford administration. And the Bush 1 administration, ultimately. This is, so anyhow, they redacted this stuff, they eliminated it, and now you've got folks from this administration going around saying out loud, well, Saddam, if he didn't want us to attack him, he could have simply proven to us that he had no weapons of mass destruction. Well, how do you do that? Well, you give them the records of all the weapons that you ever had, which he did. And you say, and you guys are welcome to visit my country and go anywhere you want, which he did. And Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei said, and we did. And you've got the Bush administration still saying to this day, I mean, they will not acknowledge reality. Oh, well, all of Europe thought he had weapons of mass destruction. No. The Germans were so convinced that Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei were right, that there was nothing there, that they said, we will not support an invasion. The French were so convinced that Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei, who were actually in Iraq looking for weapons, were correct when they said there's nothing there. And when they examined the documentation that Saddam gave, and said, here's all the proof, here's what we got, here's the bills of sale, here's who we bought it from, here's when we bought it, here's when we destroyed it. And they said, yep, there's nothing there. And you've got, it's only in the American media, I find this absolutely fascinating. You get outside the United States, and this discussion isn't even being conducted. It's only in the American media where people are sitting around speculating about, well, maybe Saddam wanted his Arab neighbors to think that he had weapons of mass destruction, and that's how he was able to fool us. He wasn't fooling anybody. Everybody knew he had no weapons of mass destruction. But it wasn't a good sell. You'll recall, you know, that interview with Vanity Fair where Wolfie said, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we want to attack Iraq, but the one that we can sell to the American people is weapons of mass destruction. So that's the one that they sold to the American people. And now you've got a situation where 70% of people who voted for Bush actually think that, number one, Saddam had something to do with 9/11. Not true. I'm not saying Saddam was a good guy. Not at all. But he had nothing to do with 9/11. He ran a secular state. He was hated by Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden tried to invade Iraq. It was his dream. The Saudi royal family stopped him and exiled him to the Sudan because he tried to invade Iraq, because he tried to kill Saddam. And they didn't want to have a war in their region. And yet these, it's like, it's just amazing to me. You tell lies to the American people and you get reelected and you give medals to the people who told the lies. It's just mind boggling. We'll get back to the minimum wage in a minute. Let's go to the phone lines for a little bit. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Line Tony in Washington, D.C. on the phone. Hey, Tony, what's in your mind?
How you doing?
Great.
I was trying to listen to it and pass that to his speech, but it seemed to me, correct me if I'm wrong, or at least have open mind to what I'm about to say, is that it sounds like the white man manifests destiny. Because if you listen to all the countries, they're all people of color.
Yeah, it's. I'm not sure, frankly, Tony, that there is necessarily a racial element there, but certainly there. You know, the whole thing about in the Middle East calling these folks ragheads and whatnot. And I remember in Indochina and Vietnam calling the Vietnamese gooks and whatnot. There was a heavy element of racism in the Japanese internment that if they were not white people, it was easier to intern them. But on the other hand, we fought against the Germans pretty strong, and they were white. I'm not sure that it's so much a racist thing as it's just a they are them and we are us thing. And that's perhaps even scarier, because it's not the simple element of racism that you can deal with, that you can label and confront. But instead, it's this. I agree with you that it's the belief of manifest destiny, but it's manifest destiny by virtue of religion and belief system, which is even scarier. See, I think what has happened here, Tony, is that George Bush, when he became sober, that was clearly a turning point in his life. I mean, he'd been in all kinds of trouble. He'd been arrested for cocaine. He'd been arrested for drunk driving. His wife had walked out on him. He was, according to Kitty Kelly, he was abusing her physically. He was beating her up and things, and she left. And he had, you know, all these, his life was falling apart. And he was, and Christianity saved his life, I think probably in a very real way. And it was an evangelical form of Christianity. And so in the classic dry drunk fashion, he's still addicted, right? He switched his addiction from alcohol to evangelism. And for a long time, he was an evangelist for Christianity. And what I heard yesterday was an evangelist for his definition of liberty and democracy, which is very different, first of all, from that of the founders and mine.
Yeah, and also it seemed like it didn't seem like a speech. It seemed like a rant. And also, he didn't talk about anything about Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yeah, not one word.
Those who were killed at all.
Yeah, not one word. No, it was one of the more alarming In fact, I would say it was the most alarming inaugural address that has ever been given in America. It was the only time, as far as I know, and I am not a scholar of inaugural addresses specifically, but I do know history fairly well. As far as I know, this was the first time that any president had used an inaugural address to put the entire world on notice that if they didn't shape up, he was going to go out and kick their butts.
That's putting it mildly. You take care.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tony. I appreciate it. I see this as you know, Bush simply shifting his addiction from alcohol to Christianity, and now from Christianity to being the savior of democracy. Instead of saving souls, now he's saving nations. And it concerns me, because I'm seeing this, you know, putting my psychotherapist hat on, I'm seeing this as a psychological pathology, and one that is very dangerous to those of us who agree with George Washington when in his farewell address, and I encourage you to read it, particularly the last third of it, where he just goes on and on and on about the dangers of foreign entanglements. He said, you know, it produces a variety of evils. He said it gives to ambitious, corrupted, or deluded citizens the facility to betray or sacrifice the interests of their own country, gilding with the appearance of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable deference for public opinion, or a laudable zeal for public good, the base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, or infatuation. See, I believe George Washington in his farewell address, I think he was prescient. He or James Madison, I mean, there's a pretty broad consensus that James Madison was George Washington's ghostwriter. But he just goes on and on about this. He says, his avenues to foreign influence in innumerable ways, such attachments are particularly alarming to the truly enlightened and independent patriot. How many opportunities do they afford to tamper with domestic factions? In other words, political parties. They called them factions back then. To produce the arts of seduction, to practice the arts of seduction, to mislead public opinion, to influence or awe the public councils. He said the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake to this danger. And George Bush just threw us full bore into it. Robert in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Hi, not much. I just wanted to thank you, actually, because you just mentioned that there's a possibility that the Iranians were the ones actually who gassed the Kurds. And you're the only second person that I've heard mention that.
I got it from the CIA.
Okay.
No, I'm serious. I mean, there's a CIA report that says that the Iranians were the ones who gassed the Kurds, and it's been widely published. I mean, I've read it, and I think it was the Washington Post. This was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But the CIA was saying that it was the Iranians who gassed the Kurds, not the Iraqis. So it's still an open question, apparently.
Yeah, I've read it a couple times, but I haven't heard too many people actually bring it up on the air.
Yeah, but let's just assume for a moment that Saddam did gas the Kurds. I mean, still, a month later, Rumsfeld goes over, shakes his hand, and says, "We'll sell you some more stuff."
Right.
What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, it's totally hypocritical.
Yeah, to say the least, to say the very least. Robert, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Okay.
I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Kate in Arcata, California is on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to say two things. First of all, I called in after Bush won and told you that one of the good things about his winning was that it would give him the confidence to be more audacious, more outrageous, and we'd be able to really see more clearly what we were dealing with. And I think that inaugural address, definitely he put his cards on the table in a way that I don't think he even realized.
Yeah, you're
how people are going to take him to task on that.
Yeah, he lacks the subtlety to realize the message behind the message. And I would be fascinated to know who wrote this speech for him, because, you know, these are obviously not his words. But, you know, I'm sure that he said to his speechwriter, I want big ideas. I want to sound really, I want one of those Kennedy moments in there. I want to talk about freedom and liberty. Please,
exactly.
Please don't mention human rights or civil rights. We're not going to go there. Please don't mention Iraq. We're not going to go there. We just want to hold to these lofty ideals and be sure and plug God in there a whole bunch of times, but try not to be too obvious about it.
Well, that plugs into the other thing that I wanted to say. I've been listening to a lot of different callers talking into different shows, and the absolute hatred and unbelievable vitriol coming from people who were Bush supporters is so disturbing whenever I hear it. And I realized that
hatred directed at what or whom?
Well, at the host of the show, like the person who's called you a couple of times has just been so disturbing in his hatred of you and your point of view.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes with the business.
Well, yes, but what I was going to say is that I've wondered why is it that this kind of attitude is so disturbing, and I think it's because the pathology of Bush appeals to the pathology of people who have the same
issues. Oh, certainly. Yeah, I think Bush is operating out of fear.
Yes.
And has all his life, and therefore there's a resonance that fearful people find with him.
Yes,
absolutely.
Or people who are dry drunk or whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you, Kate. 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks for the call, by the way.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com. You don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid, right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Overfishing off the shores of West Africa leads to overhunting of wildlife on land. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People in West Africa have relied on fishing to put protein in their diets and money in their pocketbooks, but the fisheries off the African coast have been severely depleted. A recent report says the loss of fish at sea has serious consequences for wildlife on land. Justin Brashears is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish stocks off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. He says the fish have been hammered. Brashears says some overfishing can be blamed on small-scale and large-scale operations that are based in Ghana, but more serious problems involve mechanized fleets that carry away huge amounts of fish for processing in Europe. Brashears says people in Ghana have turned to hunting because they don't have fish to eat or sell. Some of the hunting is illegal poaching inside game reserves, and a lot of it is simply unregulated. Brashears says the hunting has become as serious as the overfishing.
the kinds of species that we see declining most are certainly the large carnivores, so things like lion and hyena and leopard, and then many primates like black and white colobus monkeys, and certainly chimpanzees, and then several large, great herbivores like the elephant and hippopotamus. And so these are some of the larger mammals that seem to be struck most powerfully by this trade in wildlife, this consumption of wildlife.
Prasher says the best way to protect those animals is to provide people with other sources of food and to do a better job of managing the commercial fishery. His report was published in November in the journal Science. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas.
It's the Osama song again.
I'd be able to follow that cable right down through the middle of Krakistan Pass.
Yes.
They smoked me out, they got me running, then they stopped coming. What made them give up on the chase? They better take a look around, get their nose to the ground, or they'll find themselves staring again at my face.
Well, as you know, George Bush, he was asked, why can't we find Osama bin Laden? Well, because he's hiding. Yeah, 6'6" guy on a camel with a dialysis machine, hiding. And we can't find him. We just, can't do it. I want to wrap this back to this economic issue, because this is the thing, in my opinion, or this is a thing that, number one, I think much of this talk, much of this rhetoric about war all around the world, as George Washington pointed out in his farewell address, when he talked about how scoundrel politicians in the future may use foreign entanglements to beguile and influence the people. In fact, the exact phrasing of this. Where'd it go? The great rule of conduct for us. Well, no, that wasn't it. Here, yeah, it's gilding. Here we are. To ambitious, corrupted, and deluded. This is he says it. It will give to them the opportunity to gilding with the appearance of a virtuous sense of obligation, a commendable deference for public opinion, or a laudable zeal for public good. In other words, it looks like they have all those things, gilded with, thinly covered with, the base or foolish compliances of ambition, corruption, or infatuation. So George Washington warned us that if politicians start talking about foreign wars as a major tenet of their policy, and particularly provoking them, that's what they're up to. And I think it's because of the economic situation. You've got, if you just raised the federal minimum wage to $6.65 an hour, the Economic Policy Institute estimates that 7 million workers would benefit. Now, this is remarkable. Just it would give $400 million in purchasing power just to people in Florida, and that's going to boost the economy. But the cons don't want to talk about that. No, Siri Bob. It's tax cuts for the rich and nothing else. Thanks to Louise for producing our program this week, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it and for Rama coming in on Mondays, to Brad Walrod, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, and Ben with the archives at White Rose Society, Ben Birch. Thank you all so much. Thanks to Jay for our music, to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to our sponsors for keeping the program on the air, and to you for listening. Have a great weekend. Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, whatever it may be. Have a wonderful one. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is...